Good morning, everybody. I'm going to echo what Will has already said about our great appreciation for you coming to our annual convention, because it is true, without you reporting and telling the world what's going on here, news wouldn't get out. So we appreciate you being here and hope we can accommodate your needs. I am not going to start with an opening statement because I think most of you heard my speech. If you listen to the We Need section, that's pretty much the opening statement. We are going to be very actively engaged with this new Congress. We have hopes of moving some of our priorities along with the new makeup of the Congress, but we understand that it will still be a challenge, because we still basically have a divided government with a Democratic administration and a Republican majority in the Congress. So with that, let me just get right down to it and throw the floor open for questions. Oops. Yes, ma'am. I saw the announcement. I am not personally familiar with Ron Carlton, but the word from Colorado is that he is a quality individual, and no doubt we will have meetings with him as he steps up into that new role. That particular position has always been an important one for us in agriculture. Who's next? Yes, sir. Well, we have known that, based on our past debates in the Congress, that elements of our farm safety net are always going to be under attack. That's the first thing, and it is our responsibility to defend those programs and what they're designed to accomplish. I think there's a great story to tell about crop insurance, which a lot of people don't think about, is that, if you're going to do something to support American agriculture, and it's not so much to support as it is to allow producers to have the tools to kind of break up the highs and the lows that occur with weather disasters, with economic disasters. And so the question becomes, if you want to put those kind of policies in place, what's the best way? Well, it makes sense to have a program as in risk management programs, crop insurance, where you have farmers paying part of the bill, taxpayers pay part of the bill, and yet the programs are designed such that a farmer can custom design their sort of risk management profile. Contrast that with not having those programs in place and having to go through these ad hoc disaster assistance when weather disasters strike. To me, it's a much more rational system. It's one that works. And frankly, the amount of funding of the U.S. taxpayer to supports for U.S. agriculture has been dropping. So, we have to continue to make that case and explain why these programs are important and why we think this is the best way to move forward. Well, it would diminish the farmer's ability to manage risk. Now, cutting the funding in half, it would depend on how you would apply that across the broad array of risk management products that are out there. But it would diminish farmers' opportunity to manage their risks. Yeah, I don't want to preempt what our delegates are going to discuss. There is a public discussion about, what we should do in terms of financing the Highway Trust Fund. The current structure was designed in a time where we had a lot of different circumstances than what we had now. We had increasing fuel use, so then the taxes associated with that, would continue to grow. Now we have just the reverse with fuel efficiency as it is today. So there's a big debate that's going to evolve around that, and I'm going to let our delegates address that in the session. But, from a general perspective, we have to maintain the infrastructure we have in this country. Our highways are critical, and I get to I have the privilege of kind of getting to drive all over this country in various places I have to go. And you can see the decline in our roadways. It's just one example. And we have to keep up our infrastructure in this country because other countries around the world are spending great sums to improve theirs. And so we don't want to get behind. You know, if you look at what the interstate system brought to this country, it was a tremendous economic benefit was when it was put in place. And yet, man, I drive some sections that I would hate to have to drive a big loaded grain truck down. That fundamentally we have to maintain that infrastructure. The debate will center around how you fund that. Well, what I'd like to see, and in fact I think it's the only way that we will make positive changes in terms of increasing the resources for the Beef Checkoff, is for all those groups that represent beef producers to get together and agree on a path forward in terms of modifying the current act that is in place. And, of course, our policy is focused on a couple of areas, and once again, it may change slightly. But the primary goal of the Beef Checkoff Working Group, from our perspective, has been to figure out a way to increase the resources by increasing the checkoff rate. To do that takes legislation. To accomplish legislation in a difficult, or to pass legislation such as this in a difficult political environment, beef industry has to go in there united, and we're not united now. So if you ask me what I'd like to see, I'd like to see the beef industry get united and move forward and improve the checkoff. Too many of the entities involved in the beef industry are fighting policy battles through this discussion about the beef checkoff, which to me is a mistake. It's going to hurt the beef industry. I'm a beef producer. I know the benefits of the checkoff. And at this time in our history with society being further removed from agriculture, the education and information component and marketing component of that beef checkoff is going to be critical for the future. So that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the beef industry come together. So far, we're not there, and I've been involved in that working group for about 3 years now. So maybe we can make things better here in this coming year in 2015.
Are you hopeful you'll get to that end goal?
Right now, I'm hopeful enough to say that we should continue working on it. We're still a ways from coming to a resolution that I think will work in getting legislation passed.
One of the issues you addressed during your speech was the rail congestion problems that we've had. How have things been so far this winter compared to the last year, even into the spring? If you talked at all with any of the railroads, being at SAFC, what has been the problem?
Actually, Chris, I probably can't give you a detailed comparison. I haven't been personally have not been tracking it that close. Our staff has, our economics team has. I don't think so far we've had the major disruptions that some were afraid of earlier in the year. And, the reasons for that probably revolve around markets and who's selling what. So maybe we have avoided the disaster that was sort of predicted going into the fall. That still means, though, that we have to work to improve that congestion. We have to, improve the ability of products to move, whether that's through port congestion like we have out on the West Coast now because of the work slowdown, or whether, for agriculture's perspective, what happens when you have a commodity, i.e. oil, that starts taking up a lot of transportation capacity. And, of course, that may be self-correcting, too, given where the price of oil is going. So, these market dynamics are going to drive a lot of it. We have not been one that has wanted to, jump in and have the federal government start dictating, if you will, who needs to ship what. But so far, I think we've avoided a real disaster, and hopefully, things will sort of settle out. We still believe that the marketplace is probably the best way ultimately to resolve these issues. Yes, ma'am.
Farming and nutrition, especially your channel, can you tell us a little bit about
Well, given the, I've always said that given the number or very small percent of active agricultural producers, farmers, and ranchers in this country compared to our population, that we do a pretty good job of getting our way, if you will. I think there's in society, I believe that there's an inherent fondness for farmers and ranchers, farming and ranching. Right now, consumers maybe have some questions about how we do our farming and ranching. And part of the effort that we're involved with U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance is meant to bridge that knowledge gap. And we're starting to make some progress there. And for us to be effective politically, that's what we have to do for the long term. For the shorter term, it involves us being very engaged with our elected leadership. And, a lot of times they, because of what they've heard or think they know, they're looking for these, solutions that are, there's one-size-fits-all kind of solution or the magic bullet or whatever the case may be. And the complexity and diversity of American agriculture doesn't lend itself to that. And so I think creating a greater understanding by direct engagement with political leaders, members of Congress, United States senators, those who serve in state government is very critical. And I think farmers and ranchers do a pretty good job of that. And we're going to have to continue to do an even better job for the future. Well, coming from Texas personally and being a rice producer, I've had a long time interest just from a personal perspective about opening up the Cuba market. From an organizational standpoint, Farm Bureau has supported that opening, I guess, as far back as I remember. And the actions of the administration, I think, have been positive. Is it, once again, a magic bullet that's going to resolve everything in terms of our trade relationship with Cuba? No, but, fixing the putting the commercial terms of finance and money transfer for the sales on those commercial terms, that's a very positive one. That's one we talked about a whole lot. Ultimately, having a greater economic involvement with Cuba, exchange, if you will, having more people-to-people exchange, will do more to change conditions in Cuba than anything we've tried now for the past, lost track of time, 60-something years. What we're doing is not working if we really want change in Cuba. And so we have multiple examples around the world of when you open up markets and get people-to-people interaction, that drives political change a whole lot more than trying to do what we're doing with this embargo. In fact, well, since we're the only country, well, there's Israel, that are embargoing Cuba, the rest of the world is doing business with them. It's a good market. It's close by. It's limited population, and they have limited economic ability to have a huge market. But that should be our market, given the proximity of Cuba to the in the Gulf ports in the Gulf of Mexico.
We've got time for about three more questions.
Yes. That is one of those tough questions about finding the balance. We don't want to do anything to diminish the advancement of biotechnology and innovative methods of production. A lot of this could be helped if we probably more aggressively pursued other countries' policies to get them in sync with ours in terms of biotech approvals. That would help tremendously. I think at the farmer level, you should be aware of, where those markets may be restricted before you actually plant the product if you're worried about a market impact. So I think there's a responsibility all along the chain. The farmer for understanding where those markets are may be closed and where it may create a problem. I think the seed companies, the developers of this technology have a responsibility to do the best job they can to get the approvals. I think our government needs to help them in that case. But I wouldn't want to come down on the side of, you know, not introducing any product that hadn't been approved all across the world, or in major markets anyway. But on the other hand, you do need some, I guess, practical judgment, if you will, as to how you introduce products and have a complete understanding of where those restrictions may be. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, whether the companies are properly doing it. I mean, that's sort of one of those qualitative words about properly. I think there's enough information out there where farmers have the ability to be aware of where there may be a problem, even if the companies don't sit down with them and, you know, give them a three-paragraph explanation of all the risk involved if they buy their seeds. So. And there's plenty of other groups out there. The associations themselves, have the ability to do this. So I don't think it's a lack of knowledge right now. I think it's really just everyone needs to think about some of the consequences that may be there. Well, I don't think the last 2 years are going to be much different than the previous six, probably, in terms of the regulatory environment on all those issues that are important to agriculture. With respect particularly to the waters of the U.S., our goal is going to be to get legislation passed in Congress to stop implementation of it. It's as simple as that. I'm more confident now with the makeup of this new Congress that we will be able to accomplish that. But there's going to be a whole host of other regulatory challenges in this final 2 years that we're going to have to continue to, you know, watch, comment on, you know, work to oppose if necessary, perhaps support. Maybe there would be some positive action. But I don't think things are going to be a lot different in the last 2 years than they have been. Thank you all. Look forward. I'll probably be visiting with some of you over the course of these next few days, and certainly appreciate you being here, and hope you enjoy our annual convention. Thank you.